So I'm going to talk a bit about some of the work we've done that looked at the amount of mercury we find in terrestrial ecosystem and what factor affect their spatial distribution across the continents. But much more, I'm going to talk about some of our work that look at the re-emission of mercury back to the atmosphere. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, and because I will forget at the end, I also would like to now acknowledge the funding agencies. This work is funded in part by the National Science Foundation, Fuller Division, as well as by the EPA STAR project. If we think of classic air pollutants, and mercury is a very important air pollutant because it's being distributed globally, mainly through the atmosphere, and its impact on remote ecosystems is really mainly from the atmosphere. So if we think about air pollutions, we normally think about primary emissions, anthropogenically or natural, also for mercury, which is transported over long-range distances, is being subject to various deposition pathways, and then has its impact to the terrestrial and aquatic ecosystems. Now, for a group of pollutants, especially the semi-volatile pollutants, these primary emissions are not the only source, but they're subject to so-called re-emissions or secondary emissions. Some people also call it legacy emissions. So what basically happens is they are persistent, so they're resistant to rapid degradation. They accumulate in surface reservoirs, in lands, in water bodies, and then can be subject to re-evasion back into the atmosphere. Now, primary emission can relatively straightforward be controlled by regulatory national and global policies. But to constrain secondary emissions, especially once the surface reservoirs are enriched in some of these pollutants, is a much bigger challenge. So some of our work, or a lot of our work, is actually dealing with this issue of accumulation. Where does mercury accumulate in terrestrial ecosystem, and what processes lead to remobilization of mercury? And I'm going to discuss mainly remobilization into the gas phase back into the atmosphere. So let's first talk a little bit about some of the accumulation, what spatial patterns do we see. We finished a study where we investigated quite systematically the mercury concentrations and loads across 14 forest sites in the United States. They were nicely distributed from east to west and north to south. And these two graphs show basically the concentrations on the left side or the mercury to carbon ratios on the right side that we observe across these ecosystem components. I don't want to spend much time on it, but it's actually quite surprising how consistent these depth distribution patterns are across ecosystems. So above ground tissues that are subject to litter fall deposition, they will accumulate as litter horizons in these forests. And as we go deeper in the litter horizons to more decomposed carbon fractions and then into the soils, in the litter, the mercury concentrations increase quite dramatically from fresh surface litter horizons to much more decomposed litter horizons. Then, of course, in the soils, the concentrations are lower, but that's, of course, owned because bulk density in soil are much higher, so we don't have as high concentrations. But actually, if you standardize the concentrations to mercury-carbon ratio, you continue to see quite a depth increase. And we attribute these patterns actually mainly due to an age of the different horizons. So where we basically have older carbon fractions and old organic carbon matter accumulating in the soils that have been subject to atmospheric deposition over long time periods, really sorbing this legacy of a long-term atmospheric exposure and pollution in these various horizons. A couple of years ago, we actually tried to scale up what we observed across these 14 forest sites to the United States. And what we observed is that we found some very strong correlation to organic carbon and a few other variables. So we worked together with a carbon modeling group at the University of Oklahoma, and we basically attached our mercury carbon ratios we observed across our 14 forest sites. And we were bold enough to scale this up to the United States. In the meantime, the USGS has come out with an incredible data set of over 5,000 soil samples that they sampled across the United States. And I'm showing their map on the lower level, and our predicted map based on only 14 sites is predicted on the upper graph. So we were actually quite pleased when we saw that some of the assumptions we made, what determined some of the spatial accumulation patterns, was reflected when we looked at a much higher density data set that's now available for the research community to work with. But what I really want to mention is how large these pools are that we find in terrestrial ecosystems or here in the soils. So we estimate that we have over 15,000 metric tons of mercury sequestered in surface soils alone across the United States, or possibly over 300,000 tons scaled up on a global scale. So I don't know if it's not really important how exact that estimate is, but it shows you the magnitude of mass we're dealing with. Compare that with about 5,000 tons that we have in the atmosphere. So a really small re-emission of this large pool back to the atmosphere can have quite important implications. The rest of the talk, I really want to talk about this problem of secondary emissions, because some of the global atmospheric chemical model predicts or estimate that the secondary emissions from oceans and from terrestrial ecosystems actually exceed primary emission. And if we really want to deal with atmospheric mercury pollution, we need to pay attention not only to the power plant emissions and mining emissions, but certainly also think about the ecosystem services that we have from ecosystems that sequester and contain some of these large mercury loads. So most of our information on the re-emissions we really have from measurements at the surface. And Yannick Agnon is going to give a talk, the second talk after this, that's going to basically look at systematically what do we know based on available flux measurements at the surface. Can we use that to constrain these secondary emissions or these re-emission fluxes from terrestrial ecosystems? So I'm not going to talk about the data, but I want to highlight that our measurement methods really are mainly consisting of measuring at the surface. So we have a really poor understanding about the below surface processes. So where do these emissions come from? Are these surface limited processes, or do we have large diffusion driven emissions out of the bulk soil that basically then are subject to atmospheric re-emissions? So the way I like to think of is basically as diffusion profiles, and we're talking here about the gaseous elemental mercury because that's the volatile form, and that's the volatile form that is subject to re-emissions. So the question is, do we actually have diffusion-driven or advection-driven emissions from below the surface that basically continue to atmospheric emissions? Or do our emissions, or are emissions limited to the very surface? We have lots of information about photochemical reduction in aqueous phase, but also on top of the soil surfaces. So a lot of our re-emission flux measurements show very strong correlation to solar radiation, to temperature, but we really don't know the below ground contributions to these fluxes. So do we have in-soil microbial or abiotic reduction processes that really contribute to some of these re-emissions? We tried to address this in a couple of ecosystems. We had one study that we recently published from two forest sites in the Sierra Nevada, and we're just working on a very new project up in the Arctic tundra. So two very different systems. I'd like to call one is a typical very arid, dry, low water content upland forest site, and then of course the Arctic tundra, much more water saturation, much higher organic carbon, and also much higher mercury concentrations actually than what we found in the forest sites. So we set out and tried to actually measure the gas phase distribution of mercury in the soil profile at these sites. I'll start with the measurements in the Sierra Nevada forest sites that happened first. And what we used is we basically developed a trace gas system. I call it trace gas system one. We thought about how best to continuously monitor the trace gas concentration of elemental mercury at various depths. And we found on the top right pictures, you see those semi-permeable Teflon tubing that we found and that some colleagues recommended to us that have used those Teflon tubes to measure other trace gas dynamics in salts. And we basically set out and put those in at different depth, different locations. We hooked it up to a continuous measurement system that measured CO2, water vapor concentrations, and we had a mercury analyzer hooked up with the system. We had to make some system modifications to account for low sampling volume because we didn't want to extract too much soil air, but I think we had a pretty good first approach of trying to measure these concentrations. So these are the patterns we observed in these two Sierra Nevada forests. The top blue dots are the atmospheric concentrations. That makes sense. The global background levels here in our area are between 1.3 and 1.5 nanogram per cubic meter, and that's what we observed on a regular basis, so that served as a nice quality control that our system was tight and didn't have any major leaks. However, whenever we went in and sampled in some of the soil layers, even at the 7 centimeter depth, 20 centimeter and 40 centimeter depths, we saw an immediate decrease in elemental mercury concentration in the pore space of soils. So that was very unexpected to us because I always had the idea if we have atmospheric re-emissions, we should have seen some contributions through diffusive and advective processes from below the surface. We actually did a total of about 14 months of measurement at these two sites, and these two graphs basically show contour plots at two of the sites. Basically, the y-axis showing the soil depth, the x-axis time, and the color represent the concentrations. We had some missing periods, so basically those white bars are missing data. But in general, you see that we have a lot of blue. So blue means really low concentrations, sometimes to the detection limit of our analyzers. So what we concluded is that actually during most of the year, these soil pore concentrations were lower than the atmospheric levels. And the way to explain this is if you look at the diffusion profile, if you had a completely inert matrix, you would actually have concentrations that reflect the atmospheric concentrations. So something's going on here that basically mobilizes the gas-phase mercury concentration in the soil pores. So at the surface, interestingly, we actually did some surface flux measurements during these observations as well. And at the surface, we saw the traditional patterns of emissions during the daytime and a slight deposition at night. So it looks actually like we don't really have the emissions that were not driven by subsurface contributions, but the emissions, when we had them, were purely driven at the very surface soils. So looking at that, we thought, okay, a lot of people say that it may not really be the mineral soils that may contribute to these re-emissions, but these organic litter horizons that are near the surface, that are very active microbially, high respiration rates, may be much more easily available mercury for reduction. And in this system, it just wasn't possible to test this because, you know, the Sierra Nevada forest soils have maybe 2 centimeters of surface litter, and then you're already in the mineral soil. So we just weren't able to get any gas phase sampling from the litter layer. So when we had a recent project funded in the Arctic tundra, I thought this would be the perfect idea to set up a similar soil trace gas system in a very different system that's now characterized by really deep organic horizons, both purely organic and also very organic-rich mineral soil layers. So this is part of a larger study where we basically measure for 2 years continuous flux measurements of net exchange above the surface using micrometeorological methods. We look at the dynamics of the gas-phase mercury and of total mercury in the snowpack. We work together with a group from Colorado that developed the so-called snow tower that allows for continuous measurements of trace gas dynamics in the snow. And as the snow accumulates around the tower, it allows us to basically extract trace gas concentrations. So a really neat study where we kind of try to do a kind of a mass balance approach here of the deposition and emissions of mercury in this wonderful tundra ecosystem. So when we thought about how we want to measure the soils, I was very uncomfortable to put those Teflon tubes I used at the previous site up there, because these soils are saturated during a lot of the year. We have freeze-thaw cycles, and I just wanted a method that's much more robust and reliable that we can control a lot more. So we set out and we developed what I called soil trace gas wells. These are basically 4-liter Teflon tubes that are perforated along the edge with holes. And then we basically cover those with Gore-Tex membranes and we protect them with Teflon screens. We have pressure sensors in there, so we actually see what the pressure development does as we extract the gas volume. And they have a much higher volume, so we can let them sit in the soil, equilibrate, and then maybe take once or twice a day. We can take a good sample to have enough detection limit to quantify the elemental mercury concentrations in these soils. We did a lot of testing, so they're clean, they don't have any contamination, they respond immediately to concentrations. I don't have time to go into details, but if you're interested, I'd like to discuss this after the talk with you guys. So we set out and set those big trace gas wells at various depths in the Arctic tundra, and the idea is now to use that over the next 2 years to look at the trace gas dynamics that we see at different depths here in this tundra soils. Working in the Arctic, I had to figure out, is a little more involved than working in our Sierra Nevada forests. So we were really lucky. Our collaborators have 15 years or 20 years of experience working there, and we had great support with Arctic Pipes. We got a building that houses our equipment, and we so far we haven't had any problems with freezing or condensation in our lines, even though the temperatures are already below 10 to minus 15 degrees out in the air. So I want to show you a few slides here that shows our first patterns. It's probably hard to see, but the dots on the top, the lines, those reflect the atmospheric concentrations we measure. So our measurements, basically, we measure for 7.5 hours in the atmosphere, and then 3 times a day we go sample through our 6 soil wells that we have placed in the soils. And these are daily averages since end of August when we installed the system. So we are actually very pleased that the system seems to work quite reliably. And we were very surprised to see almost the same pattern that we saw in the Sierra Nevada forests. We basically see a very significant drop in the elemental mercury concentration in the pore space of these tundra soils. About half of those soil wells are in purely organic surface horizons, and then half of them are basically reaching down into the mineral soil. So even just below the surface, I think our shallowest well is at 15 centimeter depth where the inlet holes are. We have basically depletion that goes down to 0.4 nanogram per cubic meter compared to about 1.1 nanograms in the atmosphere. The line I draw is actually the soil temperature, so we actually do see that the soil mercury concentrations does follow, at least to some degree here, the temperature, with increasing temperature not resulting in such a drawdown as on the colder temperature. So what we're really looking forward to is to see what happens up on freeze-thaw cycles, and especially upon snow melts, when the system may get much more reducing than we have now. We measure oxygen concentration, we have a methane analyzer now there, and at this time the system is not really highly reducing, and hopefully we have this seasonality where we have highly reducing conditions, so we can actually assess if we do have a production of the elemental mercury when we get into very reducing conditions, or if this is going to be the dominant pattern throughout the year. So it'll be very exciting to await spring, and I hope the system will continue to work. So if we look now at our diffusion profile, now not only showing the mineral soil, but also a very deep, nice organic layer. So not much new. We already in the mineral, in the organic soil layers, we basically do see this drawdown of elemental mercury. And really the only way to explain that, if you think about porous matrices and diffusion and advection processes, is that you need to have some kind of sink for this elemental mercury. We don't know if it's oxidation. We assume it's an oxidation process, but it can be sorption or dissolution, and we're planning some experiments to hopefully address if this gas phase elemental mercury is really being oxidized, so we can't measure it with our gas phase analyzer anymore. More and more, when I think about that, I think the reduction processes, at least in the soils, may not be as dominant and common as we originally thought. It may be a seasonal thing. It may be photochemically mainly mediated, but we'll have to see what our patterns show through the year. So to conclude, what we know is that worldwide there's a lot of mercury associated in soils, and if this is not necessarily subject to gas phase re-emissions, it would actually point towards a quite strong and solid sequestration in those soil systems. Of course, there's other mobilization processes like runoff and vertical mobilization, but at least it seems that it may not be easy available for gas phase re-emission back to the atmosphere. If we have gas phase re-emissions, they make an important component of atmospheric contributions. We just have to see where they originate from. So currently, we see elemental mercury immobilization or depletion, whatever you want to call it, as we move into the soil profiles. And we see that consistently both in an arid forest soil as well as in this tundra soil so far. And again, I think it'll be really exciting to see more reducing conditions coming up, hopefully in spring, as well as warming conditions, and see what happens to these patterns. Thank you so much for your attention, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Any questions for Dr. Zainovic?
Do you have any estimates of how much of the pool of mercury is natural background and over Denver?
That's the big question, right? No, I don't know how you can do that. It's going to be really tough. I mean, we can use archives and we can look at the modern increase in sediments and peat archives. But in the soil, to differentiate that, it's very tough. I know some people work with stable isotope. That may have some promising outcomes, but also that's going to be very tough to do it that way.
So you used your forest Teflon tubing. Did you have a roof when you had it
Good, very good question. We decided against doing a loop because mercury is so tricky to run through pumps, so we didn't want to do a closed loop. What we basically, and that was one of the reasons we went with larger wells, what we basically do is we excavate, we don't fully excavate, we draw air samples every 8 hours or so, three times a day. So we're basically extracting about 4 liters out of those 4.3 liter volumes three times a day. That's now in the Arctic. In the Sierra, we did that too, but we had to modify the analyzer to facilitate very low flow rates. So that introduced a lot of noise. So if you start working with really low flow rates and modify the analyzer, we had much noisier patterns. So I'm actually quite pleased with this new approach in the Arctic. We have much more stable readings because I think we just have a larger volume that we can draw and we can get enough mercury to get a solid analysis.
Thanks. One more quick question.
So if the mercury is coming from the atmosphere and you're seeing that increased concentration of depth, wouldn't you think that the diffusion process would have the surface more concentrated? down lower, less concentration?
You mean now with total loads of mercury?
Yeah.
Yes, but in the Sierra Nevada forests, we made some calculations. So we ran a diffusion model, and we saw, so is this mass transport, that this elemental mercury diffusion into the soil, is that relevant compared to other environmental fluxes? And we basically calculated, keep in mind the concentrations here are nanograms per cubic meter, so we found it's only a fraction of other deposition fluxes. So this negative diffusion gradient, or this possible sink for elemental mercury, doesn't seem to be that important on a mass balance to charge the soil with gaseous elemental mercury. I think where the importance comes in is this stuff isn't getting lost as gas-phase elemental mercury once it's in the soil. I think that's the more important conclusion than this additional small sink that may be an order or two of magnitude lower than your basically infiltration of water and mercury associated with that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.